During my senior year at Texas A&M, went a little church in Waller, Texas, where I had some cousins, asked if I could come preach for them one Sunday. They were in between preachers, and so Melissa and I got up early that Sunday morning and drove to Waller and spent the afternoon with one of the members and preached that night, and then went back to our home in College Station. And we ended up doing that for a year. Every Sunday, we would drive out to Waller, and typically we would stay with the same older couple, brother and sister Lawrence Koenig. We would feast at their house for lunch, and Sister Jean would fill the table with the kind of good food that I've enjoyed in your company and in your homes this week. And Brother Lawrence was the patriarch. He sat at the head of the table. And after every meal, as we would be sitting there drinking coffee, Brother Lawrence would say the same thing. He would put his hands on his stomach, and he would say, "I wish we were just starting. Well, I wish we were just starting our time together this week." It has been a feast for my part, for what you've given me. I feel like my character has been built up just by being in your midst for the last few days. And I want to thank you for the way that you've welcomed me back home. Brother Lawrence Koenig and Sister Jean have both gone on to their reward. And I couldn't help but think at their funeral that when we've been there for 10,000 years, we'll just be getting started. And so our home here is just temporary. We're just passing through. And we're looking for the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And we won't have to worry about time. We won't have to worry about goodbyes. We'll be in the presence of our Father and our Lord and one another forever. And what a reunion and a homecoming that will be. I so appreciate all who have been so supportive of the work this week and encouraging in your remarks about my efforts while I'm here. I appreciate the elders here and the stand they make and the love they have for you. And it's obvious that they want you to go to heaven. And so they're leading you in the way behind the chief shepherd. It's been so good to be with Jeff again. As I said on the Lord's Day, we were in school together and played in the band together. And what a wonderful preacher he is. He's told me that time and time again. But I'm so glad that you have him and he has you. It's just been a treat to be with an old friend. And I sure appreciate how good you've been to my mother and my sisters, and now to their families. And I thank you for being my family and my father's and my mother's and my brothers and my sisters. Our final passage this week will be from Genesis 39. I want to invite you to turn there and read with me in just a moment. Before Melissa and I had children, we had an opportunity to go to the island of Jamaica with David and Flora Tant to preach and do a vacation Bible school. And David asked me to teach the high school class. And he said, "They're very shy. You're going to have to get them talking. You're going to have to ask questions that there's multiple right answers, and you're going to have to encourage them when they participate, and maybe they'll keep doing that. And so I thought, well, I've got the perfect question to start the first class. I'm going to ask them, who's your favorite Bible character? And I thought no matter which way they answered, I'd be able to say something. Surely I would know something about the character they named, and that would make them feel important, and then it would just start to snowball. So I had this great idea, and I thought, boy, this is really going to work. And so I said, okay, who's your favorite Bible character? Boy over here said, Reuben. I thought, well, he's the oldest, I guess we could say that. But I would venture to say that our character for tonight, if he's not at the top, he's near the top of most people's answers when they're asked, who is your favorite Bible character? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are mentioned together nearly 20 times in Scripture as a one cohesive unit. They become the face of the patriarchal age. They become the face of the covenant God made with the Hebrew people. But have you ever noticed how much space in the book of Genesis is given to the fourth patriarch, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph? Were it not for Abraham, Joseph would occupy the most space given in the first book of the Bible. And there's no effort made to just hit the highlights or skim the headlines of Joseph's life, but great detail is given to us about his character. Why is that? Could it be that there are times when all of us have been where Joseph was? All of us have experienced what Joseph has experienced? Have you ever been accused of doing something that you were innocent of, unfairly, unjustly? Have you ever been at odds with your own family, be it your family in the flesh or your spiritual family, that they could not even speak to you on friendly terms? That's what it said about Joseph's brothers. And yet, who of us has experienced those things and more and responded the way Joseph did? Responded the way Joseph did, especially here in Genesis 39. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant, and he made him overseer of his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. And it came about that from the time he made him overseer in his house and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessing was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he left everything he owned in Joseph's charge. And with him there he did not concern himself with anything except the food which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came about after these events that his master's wife looked with desire at Joseph. And she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold with me here, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house, and he has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" Came about as she spoke to Joseph day after day that he did not listen to her to lie beside her or be with her. And it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the household were there inside. And she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought in a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I screamed. It came about when he heard that I raised my voice and screamed that he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside." So she left his garment beside her until his master came home, and she spoke to him with these words, "The Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came in to me to make sport of me. And it happened as I raised my voice and screamed that he left his garment beside me and fled outside. Now it came about when his master heard the words of his wife, which she had spoken to him, saying, 'This is what your slave did to me,' that his anger burned. So Joseph's master took him and put him into the jail, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the jail. But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. And the chief jailer committed to Joseph's charge all the prisoners who were in the jail, so that whatever was done there, he was responsible for it. The chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge, because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper." I must say to you that I've had a very simple approach to my sermon choices this week. I don't believe, and I know the elders here don't believe, in just having a meeting because it's time to have a gospel meeting. It's the spring, so we're supposed to have a meeting. I chose sermons that hopefully, either in the car or in your head on the way out of the church building, somebody here might say, "Boy, I needed that. I needed to be built up. I needed to be reminded about that. I needed to know what the Lord said about that. I just really needed that." And if by chance I've missed my target this week, this one catches us all. Joseph was called the dreamer by his brothers. I want to talk to you tonight about what we do when the dreams we have for life turn to doubt, when the plans we've made come crashing down, because what you have with what's left is called character. What can we learn from the dreamer when dreams turn to doubt? Well, the first thing I want you to see, number one, is that you don't have to be a slave to your circumstances. We learn from Joseph that you don't have to be a slave to the circumstances of your life. Did you notice that verse 1 of our chapter begins, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt"? It doesn't say that he went on his own or he traveled to Egypt. He was taken down. That's what you do with a person who's treated like property. And look what happens to him. Potiphar, the Egyptian officer, bought him from the Ishmaelites. He was a slave and was taken down to a place he did not want to go. But just because Joseph was a slave didn't mean that he was going to be a slave to those circumstances. The very next verse tells us that the Lord was with Joseph. He didn't abandon him. The Lord didn't stay behind in Israel. He accompanied his servant all the way to Egypt, and because of that, he was able to become a successful man. The boy who was hated by his brothers. They could not find one thing to say to him. They couldn't speak to him on friendly terms. But his life wasn't over at 17. Because the Lord was with Joseph, he rose above the circumstances of slavery and became a successful man. Is it not so that there are people who are looking for the perfect life? That's the life that has the perfect marriage, a husband and wife who never have any disagreements. And because of that, they have perfect children who never misbehave or need disciplining. And they live in the perfect house that is never in disrepair. And they drive the perfect car that never breaks down. They go to the perfect job. They even go to the perfect church where the song leader leads all their favorite songs. The preacher quits on time and only speaks on things that they're interested in. And should there be any problems that arise in this perfect life, they're magically solved in one 30-minute episode. But that's not the way life works out, is it? That's not the way life works out for God's people. That's not the way life worked out for the fourth patriarch who got the second most space in the book of Genesis. But what is our reaction? How are we different from Joseph? The Lord was with him. He was able to become successful. We throw up our hands and concede defeat. Well, I guess this is my lot in life. I guess this is what I've meant to be. I'm just going to have to make myself comfortable here and be a slave to my circumstances. Didn't turn out the way I wanted, but I guess I'm just going to have to be satisfied here. You don't have to be a slave to bitterness. You know, there's a reason the Hebrew writer in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 15 calls it the root of bitterness. That's because it takes a hold of you and it grows and it makes a firm footing and it must be rooted out. But there are people who are so enslaved to bitterness, things that happened years ago, they're never going to get past them. They're never going to be able to help anyone else with their problems because all they can see and concentrate on is their own. You don't have to be a slave to that. You don't have to be a slave to discouragement. Always assuming the worst instead of thinking the best. You ever known someone that it seemed like their talent in life was to see the negative? I mean, no matter what happened, they're able to turn it around and only focus on the negative. There was a sister when I was in college who was so blessed. And she could always, no matter what was happening, she could find some way to complain about it. We just so happened that summer had a drought, not unlike the one we had last year. And people were praying for rain. And she was complaining about her flower beds. Her plants were dying. The ground was cracked. Everything was too dry. Well, we had a torrential downpour. And it just so happened it came on a Wednesday. And the whole day I was thinking, I can't wait to get to services tonight. She's going to have the biggest smile on her face. She's going to be so happy. She comes in the door defiantly shaking out her umbrella and said, "Well, we needed rain, but we didn't need this much rain." Do you like being around people like that? You say, "Well, I don't know anybody like that." Well, maybe it's you. Maybe you're the one who's like that. But what do? They make us negative. They cause us to be discouraged, and we didn't even start out that way. You don't have to be a slave to things like that. You don't have to be a slave to selfishness. Instead of asking, "Why me? How about, what can I do about it? Or how can I help someone else?" And hear me carefully, you don't have to be a slave to sin. If God has forgiven you, then it's time to forgive yourself. Because when the Lord's with you, like Joseph, you can become a successful man. When our dreams come crashing down, it doesn't mean life is over. So what do we do from here? You don't have to be a slave to your circumstances. The second thing we learn from Joseph, the dreamer, is that when you have been wronged, you still have to act right. when you've been mistreated, you're still obligated to do the right thing. That's not your license to lash back. You still have to act right. Joseph found himself in the house of Potiphar, and he became successful. The Lord caused him to prosper, and he became head of the house. And his master put him in charge of all the other servants and all of his personal affairs. The only problem was, Potiphar wasn't the only one who noticed Joseph. Potiphar's wife saw him. I suppose we could call her the original desperate housewife. It says that she looked with desire at Joseph. Our text says that he was handsome in form and appearance. I take that to mean face and physique. And it wasn't just a one-time proposition, but day after day, she enticed him to have sexual relations with her. And can you imagine the way the dreamer responded? Here's a 17-year-old boy who, for all purposes, has been abandoned by his family. He doesn't know that his brothers went and told his dad that a wild animal must have killed Joseph. Here's his coat and the blood. That's all we have left of him. He's thinking all the while, well, Dad didn't even care enough to come looking for me. And here I am in the land of my affliction. I might as well enjoy myself while I'm here. I might as well get something out of this. Look what the dreamer said to the wife of Potiphar in verse 9. How then could I do this great evil? Your husband might come home and catch us, right? How could I do this great evil? You might get pregnant. How could I do this great evil and sin against God? God had been with him. God had blessed him. God had caused him to prosper. Joseph's argument is, how could I betray God? Look at what he's done for me. Look at how he's been with me. How could I sin against him this way? And all the problems Joseph had had in his life, he knew that committing sexual sin wasn't going to bring his family back. Committing fornication was not going to make all of his problems go away. All it would do was make matters worse, because now he would have sinned against God. When you have been wronged, you are still under obligation to do the right thing. But man has a tendency, don't we, to add trouble to trouble. The husband comes home from the office. Somebody else got credit for his work. The big project got stalled. He's going to have to start all over. So what does he do? He lashes out at his wife and kids. Well, did that make the day any better? The teenager thinks that my parents don't understand me. They don't know what it's like to be a teenager. They're treating me unfairly. They have all these rules, and I just don't think that's right. So they sneak out of the house and go drinking with their friends. How's the trust now between you and your parents? Are they now going to give you more responsibilities or less? The wife has a husband who won't communicate with her. He won't talk to me, she says. And so she finds someone who will. She commits adultery. How's the communication gap now? Joseph knew, I have a master who is in heaven, and I cannot betray him. Times when we ought to be drawing closer to God, when our lives are in disarray, when we're wondering why me, and all those questions come up, that's not a time to abandon God. That's the time to fall at His feet. To beg for understanding. To pray for wisdom. To ask for guidance. To say, Lord, be there. But we run the other way. And we add trouble to trouble. Sin never makes a wrong right. Let our behavior in all circumstances show that we're pleasing and want to be pleasing to our Master in heaven. And when you've been wronged, as one little boy said, you were stabbed in the back right in front of your face. When that happens to you, you still need to act right and do the right thing. We learned that from the dreamer. Let us have a character that is likened to Joseph's. And would you notice with me, finally, one third thing we learn? When we study about the fourth patriarch and the way he responded when his dreams turned to doubt, we learn, number three, your plans may not always meet with God's purposes. The plan you have for your life just may not line up with what God has in mind. You ever wondered how many times Joseph must have prayed for God to deliver him? When he was being carted away from his brothers, even though they were brothers who hated him, still, that was home. And he must have prayed, God, rescue me. And then being thrown in jail, having been accused of attempted rape. Lord, save me from this prison. And then 2 years later, he has interpreted the dream of the butler and the baker. And he thought, for sure, now I'll be able to get out. And I'll be able to make something of my life. But that answer never came, according to Joseph's timetable. But there is a phrase in chapter 39 that serves as bookends for this chapter. It's found in verses 2 and 3 and verse 21. And 23. Let's read those verses again. Verse 2, and the Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. Verse 3, his master saw that the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. Verse 22, and the chief jailer, verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph, and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer. Verse 23, the chief jailer did not supervise anything under Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper. Joseph was able to realize that it wasn't his plan that was important, that God was working things according to his time. And while the two plans didn't exactly go hand in hand, he was going to relinquish authority to the Almighty and say, well, God sees the bigger picture, and so I'm going to let Him direct me from this day forward. And sure enough, you recall when Joseph's brothers come back to him and Joseph reveals himself to his brothers, he doesn't lash out at them, he doesn't throw them in jail and say, well, I'm going to do exactly what you did to me. He said, now I know that it wasn't you who sent me here. It was God. God sent me ahead of you to interpret the dream of Pharaoh so that we could store the grain during the 7 years of plenty, and now your lives will be spared. We have enough food. It wasn't you who did that. God was moving those things into place. God in His providential care was taking me where I needed to go. He was able to understand what we must come to see, our plans are not always going to meet with God's purposes. You ever notice that there are some things that you have to hold further away to see them? I see people checking their text messages, and they got their phone way out here. It's not up here, but way out here. Sometimes we pick up a piece of paper and we hold it way out here. We look at it through another lens. That's kind of the way providence works. You can't see it very well when it's right up in your face, but you can sure turn around and view it retrospectively and look far off and say, I'm sure glad God answered that prayer the way He did. Because He can see what we cannot. I can remember asking God to miraculously operate on the heart of a young lady that she might feel the same way about me that I felt about her. And He said no. And I have thanked Him for that. Because then I never would have met Melissa. And we would never have had Morgan and David. Thank God He had a plan and said no to mine. Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, we find a very comforting passage. There Paul said, Romans 8:28, for we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. The interesting thing about that verse, if we were to read it in the Greek, it would read this way, and we know that God works all things together for good to those who love God. In other words, the word cause and the word work is the same word. God works all things to work together. What's the point? God is working. He doesn't take the approach of, well, I created you, here's all the stuff you need, now just go tend to the rest yourself. I'm busy. He's working. And He has a plan and a purpose for every single one of us. And what we must do is bow in submission to His will and say, not mine, Lord, but Thine be done. Because your plan may not meet with God's purposes. We don't always know what's best for us. Sometimes we're like my son David, who recently Morgan was running fever and was starting to feel better, so Melissa checked her temperature again. He said, Morgan, I hope your temperature is zero. He meant well, but that wouldn't be best, would it? We don't always know what's best. But God does, and He's able to work all things together for good to those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. And Joseph could see that. And he believed that the same God who brought him down by an Ishmaelite caravan to Egypt would one day bring his family out in a great exodus. And so the Hebrew writer says of him in Hebrews chapter 11, by faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the Exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. He knew that God's purpose was that one day the Israelites would live in the land sworn to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, his fathers. And so he said, when God's plan is fully complete, you don't let me stay here in Egypt. You dig up my bones and you take them with you and you bury them in the land of my fathers. How did he do that? By faith. May we all have the same faith in God's plan and purpose in our life. We learned that from the character of Joseph. Well, how will you respond the next time you encounter various trials? We are assured that they will come. All who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be persecuted, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 12. James said when you encounter various trials, to behave a certain way, not if. So how do you plan to respond? Will you become a slave to your circumstances or a servant to God's purposes? Will you repay evil with evil? Or will you do what's right in the sight of God? Will you demand your will be done, my way or the highway? Or will you bow the knee to Him who sees things from His throne in heaven, who is molding and fashioning making us what we ought to be? How will you respond? Only when we have the character like unto Joseph are we assured that our dreams will come true. That one day we will all live happily ever after. Heaven's call remains tonight for those who are ready to hear. For those who are willing to submit themselves to the plan of God, He has provided the ultimate sacrifice by the giving of His Son. He has heralded His will to all who will listen. Are you ready to respond? Are you ready to come confessing your faith in Jesus as the Son of the living God? Are you ready to come repenting of your sins, turning from them, and deciding to follow Jesus all the days of your life? Are you ready to submit your will to His in the watery grave of baptism, that all your sins could be washed away? That opportunity is yours. Will you come? While we stand and while we sing.